What's up, Colin? How's it going? What's going
on? Hey, how's it going, CJ? We are back. Build and learn. How's your week looking?
Pretty good. It looks like you dropped in a link to an exciting announcement. What's the deal?
Yeah, it looks like you're wearing a celebration t-shirt. But
yes,
CJ is wearing his Postman shirt today, probably from some sort of DevRel collaboration or event. But my former startup, Orbit, appears to have been acquired by Postman. So congrats to the team over there. And it sounds like they're going to be working on the Postman API network, kind of more shifting gears towards Postman's developer community of APIs and things like that. But long time coming. So kudos to the team and Josh and Patrick for leading that effort.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of years for Orbit, for sure. And yeah, it's good to see that everyone landed at a pretty cool spot. I like Postman a lot. I've been using it way more recently. Nice. And yeah, I think I have been surprised at how much it's increased my productivity. And I think like a big part of it is just like staying organized with collections for all the different API integrations. And then under that, like having folders that automatically sync, and then having different environments. You got like your production environment, your local environment, and variables, and writing. Like, I don't actually use the tests feature of Postman for testing, but I use it for like saving and writing variables that were the result of like a previous request. Nice. So you can say like, yeah, with Twilio, maybe you make an API call that creates a conversation, and in that response JSON, you want to save off the conversation ID in a variable, like a Postman variable that you can then use in other requests later. So yeah, I've been loving it. I think for a while I jumped between Insomnia and a couple other different REST clients, but have you been a Postman user for the whole way?
I've had an account for a long time. I've been using it more because we have the API spec from Discord that's feeding into the collection there. And I'm going to actually be at PostCon at the end of this month. So probably right when this episode comes out. So if you're going to be at PostCon, come find me. But yeah, I'll just be geeking out on APIs, I imagine, at PostCon and learning more about, you know, best practices around APIs. But I think we have like 1.7, or I guess 1,700 people who are subscribed to updates to the API through Postman. That's kind of another feature as we update the spec, it updates the collection. And if you're subscribed to changes, and you can see that downstream. And we aren't using any of the test suite things or like the runners. I've been really curious to check out the runner feature and just see what else we can do. We have a bunch of different auth tokens and we need to document those better in there. And sometimes specs are like the technical thing, but not the how to use this thing. So we're trying to just figure out how best to show that, make that show up in Postman so that you know what goes where and how to go get it and all of that stuff. So yeah, pretty cool. I use PAW, which is, I guess, now also was acquired, I guess, a few years ago, but it's the Rapid API client locally, but I only use it for myself. And I think the benefit of Postman is that like Figma style multiplayer of like, you know, back when I think Figma has won the game on most things because it's multiplayer. What was the other one that was really popular before Figma?
Sketch.
Yeah. You know, Figma kind of ate their lunch because it just wasn't as multiplayer. And I'm sure Sketch is today, but Postman's got that it's great for teams. So having workspaces and all of that.
Yeah. Did I read correctly that Orbit is basically going to shut down like the existing. Yeah, Orbit closing down. They're pivoting, but I think like there's pretty good alignment between the audience that Orbit was going after and the audience that Postman is serving. And so like basically just continuing to grow developer communities, making it easier for people to connect with other folks that are using your API.
I just have what's in Patrick's announcement email here, so I don't know anything beyond the blog posts that are public. But yeah, the Orbit team will be working on the Postman API network. If you're using Orbit, Orbit users have 90 days to wind down and export their data. So no more new data. There won't be new data ingested and things like that. So, which has a lot of, there's a lot of data flowing through. I think we talked about it on this show. Some of the things that I spoke on at RailsConf around that whole network integration suite of how we would integrate data and pull that in. I imagine they'll probably use some of that. We'll see. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It also, like, just taking a step back and looking at this acquisition, it's another data point that building a company around like lots of API integrations still does not seem to work like perfectly, right? Like, which is disappointing because that's like the favorite kind of thing that I like to build. So I don't know. It's what, do you have a sense of like the trend there or the pattern there or like things that people ought to look out for if they want to go down the road of Numerous or, you know, building an API integration company?
Yeah, I think like you and I have more experience than that than the normal engineer, I think, or not the normal engineer, but the, you know, the average engineer has probably dealt with some APIs, but you and I have had to integrate with dozens and dozens in one app, right? What I like about the acquisition is that it's proving and showing that there are startups still being acquired by the companies that are not the Microsofts, Googles, but that tier below that Postman has a great user base, great community. They have the ability to buy companies. So things like that are great. Cloudflare's been buying a bunch of companies, things like that. So it makes for a healthy ecosystem if people are still wanting to start something, I think, which is great. You're right in that if you focus on the integrations, you can spend all your time there and lose sight of the problem that you were trying to solve for the customer in the first place. And there's this long tail of integrations that, like, is the nth next integration really going to add product market fit? Or do you need to solve the problem for people who use one or two of those integrations and just say, like, yeah, we are the best tool for this? And I've thought about that, like, if I ever did build co-working software, I would say it's the best co-working software for Stripe users, period. Like, I would not want to touch PayPal or any of the other 100 payment providers. And people will probably then give you reviews of like, oh, they don't support X, so I'm not going to do it. And it's like, yeah, but it's just a really, really long bridge to nowhere when you're integrating every single thing under the sun. Because then you got to support them all, maintain them all, answer questions on all of them. You got to learn them all really well. So that's kind of where I'm thinking about it. I still love integrations and APIs and all of that, but I do think quality over quantity is probably the winning formula going forward.
Yeah, it also seems like at some point Orbit was encouraging people to build their own integrations, right? And just like use the Orbit API, but build your own integration. And I am struck by the fact that like Zapier, make.com, you know, If This Then That, like these types of companies where it is purely like the integration platform, that those, they're able to be successful. And I wonder if it's because they've reached some sort of critical mass where they have enough integrations where they can get people to use it. And then by people using it, that encourages third parties to build their own apps like on top of it. And that just like creates a network effect that continues to drive more integrations from third parties. I don't know. Like, how do you, basically how do you reach that critical mass to get people to use it?
Well, and with Zapier, like the Orbit Zap, we had to maintain it, not, but right. So like they don't have to learn. If someone wants it, someone's going to build it. And it doesn't have to be that company that builds it. Sometimes it can be a third party dev. You're right, Make, a lot of this is like user-generated or third-party supported integrations, which come with their own issues, right? Like if you release a new feature and then it's not in the third-party thing, then that can be harder and you can't go make a third-party go add a new feature or something, or maybe they don't implement it the way you want them to or how you would do it. Make is a good example. There is another announcement that I'll share in the show notes too, which is that AutoCode is shutting down and they are one of these similar tools like API integrate with all the things, but it was also like kind of Replit, like you could write code in the browser and do chatbots and things like that. And when you dig into it, it was run by a very small team. I know about them because of Discord. There's a lot of Discord bots, or rather a lot of people learned how to build Discord bots using this. And they even talked about this on Twitter at AutoCode. A lot of people learned to use the APIs and build bots here, but then they graduated off of AutoCode. Like as soon as they learned it, they would go spin up their own Heroku or their own box somewhere, and then they would have their own app. And the person who ran this is going over to OpenAI because there were a lot of GPT bots that were built with this. So as far as I can see from the announcement, AutoCode's going to get shut down. But they have this really cool project that's called Instant.dev that they run. So I'm curious to see. It's an open source thing. They basically have said, like, if you want to take your AutoCode projects, you can spin them up with Instant.dev on Cloudflare or wherever you really want to host it. I don't know if it actually is Cloudflare. There's like a bunch of acquisitions that I'm now kind of getting crossed in my head. Because the other one that I'm kind of excited about, this is just the acquisition show, is PartyKit.io is being acquired by Cloudflare. And this is like a really cool way of adding multiplayer and collaboration, like Y.js, auto-merging of documents and things like Google Docs style. And if you go to PartyKit.io right now, CJ, you see my cursor and I see your cursor. So this powers that like Figma style multi-thing. And I think if you hit slash, it doesn't work on the website. But they had the ability to type and then the typing would happen. And even in that background, you can see that the background is changing based on your cursor. So this like multiplayer state is handled by PartyKit. And so they just got acquired by Cloudflare. So like there's a theme here of APIs, state, multiplayer. So if you're building something out there, think about, you know, how you can build that like network that you plug into all these other things, because maybe one day when you do want to get acquired, you now have this like rich relationship with a bunch of companies that will be like, hey, like half of our users are coming from your tutorials. Maybe we should just buy you.
Interesting. Yeah, I've been really impressed with how well Replit has been able to like go from kind of a toy browser thing where you can write a little bit of code and run it to like now they're pretty legit like hosting company that starts with browser, like a browser editor that is multiplayer and collaborative. And yeah, they've been doing a really, really good job, I think, of just continuing to build insanely fast and releasing features and like really, really fast, especially for like younger and newer junior devs. Apparently, like a lot of their audiences, folks who are graduating from like scratch and they want to run something and they don't want to set up their environment. And so they just throw it up on Replit and off to the races. So yeah, interesting to hear that AutoCode is shutting down. This PartyKit thing, I think I heard about this on a Syntax FM episode, but I never went and played around with it. It looks really cool.
I think I first found it as a way of adding a Stripe-like customer satisfaction type thing to the bottom of every docs page, where you could technically do it with like a key value stored anywhere, but you still need that, like you click the thing and then it updates the counter and it would actually update across to everyone who was on the docs at the same time, and kind of like giving an Instagram post like a heart, right? You can add that interaction. And the cool thing is if you're on the docs when someone likes it, you see the little animation pop up and just a little bit of surprise and delight. But also just like if you're reading a thing and you're like, oh, I'm getting a lot of value out of this, and then you see all these hearts popping up, you might also be inclined to click it as well.
Yeah, this is all stuff too that you can achieve with Turbo.
Tell us more.
And Rails. Yeah, like we've been learning a ton about Turbo at Craftworks, and most of the team comes from a React background, and so they want to make the application, like they have a lot of expectations around how the application can be built in a very front-end, like single-page appy way. And so there's features that we're adding that really would typically lend themselves more to a React-based application. but we have made it really, really far with just Hotwire and Turbo streams and things like that. And so we have a lot of pieces of the application now that will make a request as a Turbo stream to the server. The Turbo stream web components come back to the client, and then we'll update or replace or move certain things on the page instead of reloading the entire page. And an example of that is, as part of our messaging feature, if we receive a message from a customer, it will go and live broadcast and update notification counters and things like that on anyone who's currently active. Nice. So yeah, like everything that you kind of like know and love from a Slack application or Discord, right? Marking something as unread and telling you that it's unread through these Turbo streams is pretty sweet.
Across multiple clients, if you have a desktop app, does Kraftwerk have or plan to have a desktop type app? Or sorry,
we call it Kraftwerk desktop,
or I guess mobile rather.
Yeah, we do have. So we have a React Native app that is mobile, but we don't have any WebSockets integrations yet with that.
Cool.
So it's on our mind, and we've got sort of the cable, action cable stuff working, so we can broadcast JSON when things are updating and then use that. You can kind of like listen on any device for those broadcasts, or any device that can run JavaScript. You can listen for those broadcasts on certain channels and then update the UI based on those.
Nice.
So yeah, we've got a few little hooks in place, but yeah, party kit. Maybe we need to build like the Turbo party kit. There's probably something like that already, I bet.
I think the advantage of party kit for like a static site generated site is there was no backend, right? And so party kit is the backend. You are building your backend. And so I think,
okay,
you already have what you need. There might be some patterns and some cool, like if you look at their examples, you could be like, how would we build this in Rails with Turbo? And I think that would be the equivalent. But, you know, with a lot of people doing thing and on all these like static deployed sites and Cloudflare and all that, oftentimes you don't want to, you know, mind doing some of this stuff. I think their more intense stuff was the YJS, the like, we're going to both edit the same sentence and there's going to be a merge and a diff and who's going to win. Those kinds of things are painful to do. So sometimes it's nice to just let YJS or PartyKit or the integration between both handle that. So yeah.
Got it. Okay. This makes a lot of sense.
I could also be getting some of this wrong, but that's my interpretation of PartyKit.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like you do have to have like for YJS, it's expecting that you have some server. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's like a Rails version where you implement the
back end and then you have a YJS front end.
Yeah.
You can build your own Google Sheets, Google Docs.
Yes. Which we've talked about. We've rebuilt so many things at Kraftwerk. It's like, okay, what's next? What are we going to do next? I think next is calendaring, which is funny because I know you've got some more updates about the calendar. One thing before we move on from PartyKit, I noticed that TL Draw is one of their kind of like logos that they have is in terms of like who's using PartyKit, and tldraw.com is the site that had that really epic demo where you can put in your OpenAI key and then you can just tell it like generate a game that does blah, blah, blah. And then it'll just spit out a drawing.
I see. Yeah, I'm assuming I can share this project and then I bet both of our cursors would show up on TL Draw. So, you know, most apps, we kind of expect that these days. I don't know if Figma is the one that really moved the needle on that, but it's the one that comes to mind the most in terms of like everyone should just be able to join and see things. PartyKit has a cool little demo that's just called Cursor Party, and that's the thing that powers all the cursors on your screen. I'm working on bringing that into Discord just as an example app, but it's unclear like what's going to happen with PartyKit as part of the acquisition. So I'm waiting to see that lands first. So yeah.
Got it. Very cool. Let's see.
What are you doing with calendars?
So yeah. So we're just now starting to figure out like how to algorithmically schedule crews and painters onto projects. So as the crew continues to grow, like, I don't know. I can't remember how big, but let's just say once we get to 50 plus painters, it becomes really challenging for a single person to keep in their head, like who's out sick, who's on PTO, who can hang drywall, who can, you know, who knows how to work the pressure washer, who knows how to handle asbestos, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, matching that up with projects. So like maybe there's a project we want to send the A team and we want to make sure that they have like an epic experience with a very specific crew or painter or whatever. So we're trying to build out like these different features that you can attach to a, like a painter, or in even down to like leveling them, marking up their skills, having a bio, avatars, like a bunch of statistics about them. And then on the other side, like, how do we figure out based on what we know about a project, what are going to be the like skills that are required to execute on this project? Like from the estimate, can we tell this is going to need a pressure washer, or this is going to need to have one of those tools that like vacuum cleans the popcorn ceilings off or something. And then based on that, try to algorithmically assign people to places. So gnarly calendar problem, but we'll see. It should be fun.
Nice.
What's going on with, yeah, what's going on with the conference room booking stuff at the collectives?
Yeah. So I played around with trying to build some of this with OpenAI and just sitting down and just banging it out. And it's just, it's doable. The surface area is just immense. Like all the edge cases, and I don't want to solve for all of them because it's just for us. But then I have been tinkering, as I mentioned, like, do I build this so that I can just like put it out there as a SaaS type thing that's just add your rooms, add your iPads to each room, and it goes. And there's no, it's not co-working specific. You could use it in a yoga studio, a gym. I think, want to do that because there's just like so many fun things in there. Like, and like getting my hands on, like, it would mostly run itself, I think. I could drop the link in some co-working groups that I'm in that they're always fighting over what software they use. There's enough gyms and yoga studios that I think would pick it up organically. But it 4 days from now is when ours stops working. So it's like I have a lot of things going on. And part of me is just wondering if we just pull the trigger on paying for it for another year, use it. I just checked, it ends up being about $125 a month. And that's where it's like, it's worth that, obviously. So we'll probably just do that, and it'll give us another year. And I need to not wait until 11 months from now to revisit it, which I don't think I will, because I have a pretty good start of it. And it would just be like, it's a React Native app that runs a React, checks the Google APIs. And this is an example of, we would only support the Google API. Like, I'm not doing this for Microsoft calendars and whatever else is out there. No, I don't even know what people are using anymore. But yeah, so I think that's where we're at. We'll probably just pull the trigger on it, get it set up again. I mean, it's still set up, so we'll just keep everything working, and then we can add people to it. And yeah, they're, like I mentioned in a previous episode, they're really pushing this upsell of like having people book desks before they come in. And so it's really designed for this hybrid work environment type thing, which we're really not. So like the first screen you log into on the mobile app is book your desk for the day. We have to teach everybody, like, go down here to the calendar, like the conference room page, and then book your room and all that. So we'll just do that. I think that decision made, just commit to it. And yeah, we'll see how it goes from there. We'll see if that whole like Calwind idea from last episode becomes a thing and bake it in there.
Yeah. Are there pretty good support for calendaring UI packages for React Native on iPad?
So I was just looking at turning all the calendars that Tailwind UI has into actual, they're beautiful, but they're static. And so you need to go in and create all the hooks for moving events around on the screen. For mobile, it would be more of a different UI of like, just tell us what day, we'll show you what's available. So it will be a little bit different on phones, but I think most people would book through the website. Maybe we make like a Slack thing that lets you just like slash book, and we just launch a temporary screen that you use, and then it knows who you are based on your Slack and all of that. But
cool. That'll be awesome. And there's been a few things where recently, we're moving off of services, and that just creates a lot of pressure to get something completed and shipped and out the door. We're shutting down one of our communication channels. And so that was like, we have to have like our new communication channel set up and running and like tested and everyone moved over by X day. And it was a good forcing function. Yeah. It's like, okay, like we've got to hurry up and like make sure this is live and working.
It makes sense when it's your core business, but for the co-working space, it's like, this needs to not take up more of my mental space.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, 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 100%.
Which leads into just more of a recommendation, and we can talk about this more in depth in the future, but I was listening to a podcast where the guest was Cal Newport of like Deep Work and Digital Minimalism, and they have a new book out called Slow Productivity, and this is for anyone who feels like there's just a lot going on right now. Like if you feel like your day is dictated by Swiss cheese of meetings, pings, Slacks and Discords and text messages and social media, a lot of really refreshing takes. And we'll put a link to the podcast because it's like a really fast introduction to it and more of an interview style. And then if you're on Spotify Premium, it's free as an audiobook there. I've started listening to more books there and getting rid of my Audible subscription. The subscription fatigue continues, but I'm trying to consolidate that. And the overarching theme is they actually are rooted most of their stories in referring to the stories of people who have made these huge accomplishments in their life, like Marie Curie, Jane Austen, Benjamin Franklin. And it's like a lot of stuff's out there. Like you should have the same schedule as Ben Franklin. And it's this like uber productive schedule. His is this alternate take where if you zoomed in on any one day of their lives, you might catch them just at a park. The next day, they're just on a walk and they're thinking about and observing and focusing on like this problem that they've focused on for years in their head, but they're taking vacations and they're living life. And then there's this intense season where they publish, right? Or they create this thing. So like day to day, there's not this 100% hustle culture and productivity. In fact, you have to take those breaks to let things just run in that background thread. So really refreshing. There's a lot of tactical things of like, you work for a company and you might not be able to take off Fridays, but here's how you can kind of simulate like blocking and tackling your schedule. If you can't use like the Basecamp cycles thing of 6 weeks on and 2 weeks off, he's like, you could probably work hard for 6 weeks and then coast for 2 weeks, and people will remember you for the 6 weeks and not the 2 weeks where you were slacking off. So a lot of really good tactical things if you're looking for like, okay, that sounds great. How do I do this? How do I take time off?
Yeah.
So it hit me right where when I needed to hear it. So I was like, okay, let's go binge this.
Yeah. I know you shared it. I haven't listened to it yet, but I really want to get into it because it also is like perfect timing for me. I was just telling Mike this week that like I owe everyone something right now. Like, you know, I've like promised things to everyone and it's a tough spot to be in. So thankfully he jumped in and helped a lot.
That's a big part of it, Mike, right? Sometimes we care a little too much and put it on ourselves. And so yeah, let's both finish. Let's listen to that podcast at least, and we can chat about it more in depth in the future. And honestly, I would totally not be surprised if we could get Cal Newport to come talk to us too. So
yeah, be great.
He's doing the book tour right now. So
yeah, Deep Work was huge. Yeah. So
if you're struggling with it, definitely check it out. I think the other thing you want to talk about Make at all?
Sure. I mean, this goes back to the integration stuff a little bit. Like Make.com, similar to Zapier, it's just like another version. I was working with a client who reached out for some questions about a Stripe integration they were building, and they built like this really sophisticated Stripe Connect flow in Make, like entirely with like no code, click and set up HTTP calls, and built like this giant series of like 20 API calls to onboard like an indie person onto their platform. And so I was inspired to use it for some nurture campaigns that we're going to do. And we've been looking at it with the team just to set up like some simple triggers based on events that happen inside of the Kraftwerk backend, basically, and then some simple endpoints where you can fetch information about customers to know whether or not we should message them. And then you can build like some surprisingly sophisticated workflows directly in Make. One thing that I like about Zapier that I haven't been able to figure out in Make, I'm sure it's possible, is using timers. Like, okay, you get this trigger, wait a day, check to see if you can send them a message. If so, send the message and then start another timer that lasts however long. And it's kind of a pattern that I've noticed at lots of different companies that I've worked at. And maybe this is like a potential startup somewhere. Someone can take the idea. The problem is there is some event that's happening or some major thing that's happening, and you want to trigger automations that are time-based that surround that event. So in our case, we're going to have a paint project, and 2 days before the project happens, we want to send an email that's like, hey, we're coming in 2 days. 1 hour before the start time on the first day, we want to send a, hey, here's the crew that's coming. Here's a picture of the crew, whatever. During the event, every single day, we want to send like these daily updates. After the event, we want to send a request for reviews. Very similar to in vacation rentals, where you have a booking that's coming up and you want to message the guest. And you'll say like, hey, guest, here's the Wi-Fi password and here's the like lock code. And then after they check in, you want to say, hey, how's it going? Do you need anything? Mm-hmm. And after they check out, similarly, you want to say, hey, can you send us a review or like, you know, any feedback about your stay? So these, like, I don't know, I feel like there's a platform probably where you can build just a series of events that happen around a start date and end date. And those can act as like a template that will fire off triggers that happen at all those different points.
Because the edge cases are what happens if we move it out a day, if we cancel, we don't want the other things to happen. Like if it's downstream, mm-hmm. if someone isn't going to be home to let in the crew, so it needs to shift by hours, but then it can't be on a weekend. Like there's so many little mm-hmm. things where it's like, actually, if my house is being painted on Friday and Monday, I probably do want the Saturday email. But if the job ends on mm-hmm. Friday, maybe all the emails go out on Friday, or maybe it's still Saturday. And I see this with e-commerce, less like subscriptions too. Like I do a subscription box for food delivery, and like I have mm-hmm. to pick my meals on a certain day. And sometimes I'm not going to be here on a Tuesday, so I have to change it to a different day. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine, I mean, that one's a little bit simpler because we're not trying to coordinate people's, like you were mentioning all those calendars too. Like now, do we even have the crew available to do right. those things? Yeah, I wonder if there is a service out there for that. Immediately, I start thinking about, because I think Sidekick has this concept of like groups of tasks. And so you could cancel mm-hmm. the entire group and you can schedule them too. But mm-hmm. then you got to mm-hmm. make sure you get your time zones right. There's so many things that can go wrong. And if you did everything relatively, then it kind of works, but time zones will still be there.
Yeah, we are using Sidekick's like scheduling for some stuff. Like you can send a scheduled message mm-hmm. and we're using it for like debouncing a couple things. And I don't know, we've got like a couple of features in there, but yeah, maybe we should look into that.
Yeah.
I like that idea of like, okay, as soon as a project is scheduled and locked in, then we just like schedule a template that has like series of jobs. And at any point you can just like cancel the whole group and then, or like update the entire group,
right.
basically just like delete them all and generate them again or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good idea. We built it basically from scratch using DJ Celery, like the Django cron job tool and a bunch of database calls at MyVR, but
that's yeah, more I of like a polling. Like, should I send something? Should I send something? I really like the evented way of doing this, but then there's a lot that could mm-hmm. go wrong too. So you almost have to event and then verify that this should still be sent before you send anything. Like, am I still valid?
Yeah. Yeah. The way that we built it there was like, we built the polling, like we built the eventing on top of polling. Mm-hmm. So like we had a job that ran like every minute or
event
something.
Emitter. Yeah.
And it would check. Yeah, exactly. We check the database, like, and then based on the statuses of different things, and the timelines of things, it would just fire events. Yep. And then those events were, we could then everywhere else in the entire application, you can build it as like, just like a subscriber or consumer of all the events and say like, oh, hey, you know, this happened. Let me go fire off these emails or Slack messages or whatever.
Nice.
Later on. Yeah.
Yeah. These are the things they don't teach in boot camps.
Yes.
These are the things that only experience can do. But I think these are like kind of fun questions for like more real world interview questions. I would think like, hey, you need to send an email when a job is done. Like, what are the ways you could do it? Mm-hmm. What are the trade-offs? I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then what happens? Yeah. What happens when it moves? Yeah. And yeah.
I think that's much better than like, you know, reverse this binary tree that you'll never do in this job ever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Prove to me that you've written, that you've written all the leak code problems and all that stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of leak code, you're learning game engines. What's going on with this?
Yeah. So for work, I'm trying to figure out, we have a good sense of which game engines are most popular with game developers, but then you always have those, again, the long tail of game and, you know, just like APIs. And so I'm trying to decide how we're going to do integration, like tutorials mostly. We're not, do we create like a starter for Unity, a starter for Play Canvas? There's a lot of these HTML5 ones, Play Canvas, Kaboom, things like that. So just looking to kind of make it easier for people to get started. We released the docs at GDC, and then it's been fun to watch in Discord, like a lot of people just figuring it out and figuring out what they can do. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be taking all of that and compiling it into the next series of tutorials of like, yeah, we forgot to tell you how to do this, even though it's just right there. Like it's in the mm-hmm. SDK. People have figured it out, but we could do a tutorial around it. I'm excited to do a bunch of video content around it. So part of that is learning Unity, because Unity requires not only our SDK, but you also have to drop something into Unity to talk back and forth and almost actually event. You have to emit the events from Discord into Unity, into your game, and then catch them and then respond to them and vice versa. So we don't currently give you that. And I'm trying to think through like, what do we do in our Unity games that we can kind of open source? And mm-hmm. then we want to talk, like we're going to talk to Unity too and say, hey, DevRel over Unity, like what do we want to do together so that they can maintain the Unity piece, we can maintain the Discord piece, so I don't have to become, again, it's this exact mm-hmm. same problem with the APIs. Like we cannot be experts in all of these all the time. Maybe this is where some of our partners, like we have some of our partner activities are built in Play Canvas. Cocos, there's a lot out there. Godot. It was cool at GDC mm-hmm. to like go and see what people are using for all these different things too. But yeah, mostly just having fun with it. My first Unity game is a cube that spins in 3D space. It's all nice. It does, but it's a start. I think the goal is to like every person who joins should get their own cube, and we'll just see if we can get that to run. And then you run into the party kit problem of now CJ's cube moves. How do we tell the other cubes that CJ has moved? Mm-hmm. So turns out all these problems are the same at the end of the day.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. We're putting boxes. Usually we're putting boxes on the page, but you put a cube
That's
on the
true.
Page.
3D so like, boxes.
Yeah, this is the future.
With cameras. I mean, that is the biggest difference, right? It's like you're like rendering cameras and then moving the camera versus moving the cube. Yeah. It's fun. At the end of the day, we're getting to make some games. So I think that's going to be fun.
What a cool opportunity too, to just learn lots of different game engines. Like I assume you'll come away with just like, if nothing else, like a Hello World level understanding of all the different game engines and like how to, you know, from supporting people and answering questions and building tutorials and demos, like what a cool opportunity.
Yeah, totally. I won't steal Shay's thunder, but she's working on a really cool series, as she's the other DevRel at Discord around gaming. So that's all I'll say for now. But for the actual like tutorials, I'm trying to decide, like it feels like it falls under my job description. So I'm trying to figure out like, does it make sense for me as DevRel at Discord to be releasing like a little tutorial or video on each of these? Or do I go maybe stream on my own and, you know, in my own time, and do the Colin learns all the game engines, you know, late night edition and do it off work time. So yeah, maybe a little bit of both. Yeah. We'll see.
Yep. Yep. Opportunity to strike a balance and also like network and connect with other teams. Yep. That'll be cool.
Yeah. This is the, how do you avoid burnout when you're chronically online?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, cool. Awesome.
Good episode. Let's wrap it there.
Sounds good. Where right can on. People well, find notes for the show?
Yeah, head on over to buildandlearn.dev to check out the links and resources that we mentioned. And yeah, if you're feeling generous, why don't you head over to your podcast player of choice and drop in a 5-star review. And if you leave a review, let us know how we're doing. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And yeah, we are just over 40 episodes now, so we have been pretty consistent. Feels good. So
1%.
Yeah, I guess. And until next time.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Yeah, bye friends.